from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster: wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday to you, TGIF, here on Sports Daily. Glad to be with you. It is Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester. We are ready to roll on this Friday, getting you ready for a Royals weekend, getting you ready for bulletin board material from Chiefs training camp. Well, really from Raiders training camp. Take you all through the sports world today. We've got giveaways for you. We'll give away some HTO, all kinds of fun stuff coming your way. Jad Chambers is manning that IHOP hotline. It is available to you at 869-1240. Of course, you can also leave us your comments here on the program. You can do that on our Facebook, our YouTube streams. You can also find us on 12 News Connected. Happy to be on 12 News Connected as well. It's a great morning. How are you, Tom?
Man, I'm good. Glad to be here. Looking forward to getting going on a weekend, to get ready for a weekend. It's going to be hot. I know we've kind of had a break from the extreme heat, but it looks like it's coming right back. So, you know, it really hasn't felt really like crazy summertime in Kansas, but it's right around the corner for us.
Yeah, look, it is July, and it will be hot, and we will be okay, and it'll be fine, but it's July, right? Like, we know what we're getting ourselves into here. I think would you rather have it in waves like this, or would you rather have it just, you know, constantly hot? I think we've actually done a pretty good job of surviving this July, actually.
It hasn't been bad. It's been pretty seasonable.
We had a little bad stretch, right? Yeah. We had the first heat dome came at us, and we survived it, and now we got another one coming, and it'll be okay. I'm going to take two of my kids, and we're going to go play golf after the show today out at Crestwood Country Club.
Might maybe even try there, because I think I'm going to go too.
There's 36 holes of golf, so we got about a 1 in 36 chance to get that. It won't be too hot. They'll love it. We'll have fun. We'll wear a little sunscreen. We appreciate Crestview's support of this program, by the way. 36 holes. So, you know, you rarely get clogged up out there. And then, you know what, the thing to do right after you get off the course, go jump in the pool, which who knows.
I thought you were going to say drink a beer, because that's usually the direction I go.
That is accurate. They also have beer there at Crestview. We appreciate their support of the program. Give them a call. Go check it out. Maybe you'll see us out there. We're both out there and we both really enjoy it. So we have a few things to get into today. Some trades are happening in Major League Baseball. We dug in a little bit to the Royals yesterday. I think we certainly continue that conversation. A big one happens last night. Randy Arozarena to the Mariners. And I got to be honest, they didn't pay much for him. And that, I don't know what to make of that. Maybe that's a good sign for the market. I'm not sure. But that's certainly a player that is really good and has been really hot lately. And the Mariners look like they got a coup. Not something that I particularly wanted to see for the Royals, because that's likely a team they could be battling for a wild card spot. See, my Rangers would be battling in the AL West, but it looks like they got a big one. The Diamondbacks have made a move as a buyer, which is interesting. One of the best relievers in baseball breaks his hand in a fit of anger. So there are all kinds of things happening in Major League Baseball as it pertains to the trade deadline as the Royals get ready to go on the road and play some more baseball. And so we will get into all of those things as well today. We'll check in on Chiefs training camp. They go in full pads today for the first time. So looking forward to that. You never know really what you're going to get into there. But we haven't talked a lot of Chiefs over the past couple of days. We will. This is, you know, just sort of one of those things you check off the list, right? You get into it and okay, here we go. Now they're putting pads on. Now they're doing all this. So we'll check in on camp and we'll check in from Raiders camp where they seem to have made a very, very, very big mistake, but we'll dig into that as well with a certain puppet. What do you make of these? What do you make of these trade deadline moves? I mean, I can't believe the Mariners got Arozarena for what they got him for, and I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if we just blame the Rays for letting him go so easy, or if it is some bigger sign of what could potentially be out there for the Royals.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. And I was surprised by it on a number of different levels. I was surprised that it happened when it did, because I feel like there could have been more buyers, through the weekend and into Monday and Tuesday for Arozarena. I felt like that the Rays could have gotten more out of him from another team, and especially if they had waited until Monday or Tuesday. I was also surprised that the Mariners were the team that ultimately acquired him. Not that the Mariners weren't going to be buyers, because I do think that they, in some capacity, were going to be buying this trade deadline cycle. But I certainly didn't think that they would want to pursue somebody like Randy Arozarena, although for the price tag that they got for him, it does make sense for them. I was just surprised that that was ultimately the player, they ended up acquiring, because I thought it would be quite a bit heftier of a price tag for a player the caliber of Arozarena. It's a power bat. The Mariners were in desperate need of a power bat. That's been the major flaw in their team and the reason why they've fallen off over the last month to month and a half. So it's been a little surprising. I felt like that trade, I woke up to it this morning, happened late last night, that trade, middle of the night, that trade went through. I still don't actually know completely what to make of it. I don't know if that's going to be a trend that we see carry through towards Tuesday and through the trade deadline, or if it's kind of an outlier and we'll see things kind of be normal as we make our way through.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to know, because people may look at his stats this year. You got to be careful, though. He has been white hot for the last month and a half, and back to the normal Randy Arozarena we've known over the years. He got off to a really slow start, but he's on fire. He's as high level a bat, if he's playing at that level, as we'll probably see traded. And so, yeah, it doesn't seem like the Mariners gave up much. They didn't, unless the Rays are just, and they're scouting dynamos, so you never know. But that was interesting. There will be other names, I think, that could become interesting for the Royals if you know that that's the price tag for that kind of player. Look, somebody else that's being rumored that I think would be a pretty good fit for the Royals, that could be out there. Like, if those kinds of players are going for, that kind of value, then there are a lot of players that come in. I've mentioned the name Lane Thomas before. Lane Thomas is a really interesting player to me that's under control through next year. He's been his on-base percentage against left-handed hitting is wild, maybe. And he has some ability, and he doesn't play a ton of games. But, he's another guy that maybe you could get in there and platoon him out. I don't know. There are all kinds of possibilities if that's the market, if that's where things are headed. So we'll watch it closer. And if you're a buyer, that's a good sign. I can't believe, though, that that tells us this is what the market is. I think it's a one-off. I do. If that's the market, it'd be the best news to ever happen to the Royals. Because the Royals can make that trade. I mean, they could make that trade. I can't believe that it is, and I don't know why the Rays did it. I don't.
Yeah, there was some reporting last night that the Royals have been in contact with the Angels, and presumably the Angels are going to be in selling mode this year, probably more so than maybe they ever have been, at least in the Mike Trout era. And that they're fielding calls on a number of different players, and that the Royals are potentially interested in a player like Taylor Ward that the Angels have, and that the Angels may make him available. He's an outfielder.
Yep.
He swings a pretty decent bat. And so that is a name that has been linked to the Royals within the last 12 hours or so. That's an addition. I've not heard that specific name before. I've heard the Angels and the Royals early on, as you know, even maybe as far back as a month ago. In fact, I remember saying a few weeks ago that I thought Joe Adell from the Angels would be a good fit for the Royals if they were looking to trade for an outfielder. I haven't heard Taylor Ward until now. So there are quite a few players out there, and that's been the case all along. There are quite a few players out there that could conceivably fit what the Royals are looking for. And so that's why, you know, over the last couple of weeks or so, I know that not only our discussion, but many other discussions have centered around and actually kind of focused on somebody like Tommy Pham. And for good reason, there's nothing wrong with Tommy Pham as far as
I'd rather have Tommy Pham than Taylor Ward. I'll put it that way.
But my point is that there are a lot of options out there.
There are
a lot of outfield bats that are presumably on the trade market from teams that are looking to sell.
Man, I'd love to see Randy Rosarena. I'm just going to say that a thousand times today. That would have been such a good fit. Look, Taylor Ward had a great start to the season. He has not been good lately. And he's not at his – now, you could say this, I guess, in one of two ways. He's not at his career average this year thus far.
His average is low.
Which is about a 250 hitter. But I'm looking at everything I look at with the Royals. I'm looking at a potential leadoff hitter. And his on-base percentage this year is not amazing. His average is certainly higher, and it has been higher in the past. But he seems to be not – to his norm, and I don't know what to make of that. You never know. Change of scenery. It wouldn't be a name I hated by any means, but if I'm going, I would rather just have Tommy Pham if I'm going that way, right? Tommy Pham, we know what Tommy Pham does, and what Tommy Pham does offensively is literally what the Royals need in this lineup desperately. But if you can cast a wider net, it makes things interesting. A, first call I make is Jazz Chisholm. You know, if that's what a Randy... If that's what Randy Rosarena brought, then we need to have a conversation about Jazz Chisholm. Don't you think? Like, you got to kind of start there, because now you know you've got, you know, a player that fits and checks a lot of boxes, but you've got a young player, you've got a guy who makes a lot of sense for you. Like, there are all kinds of different reasons why you would like that. And if that was the going rate for a Rosarena, then why not get in the Jazz Chisholm business, who's younger than Ward, plays a better defensive position for you, and does a lot of the same things offensively that he does. Now, he'd probably be more expensive, certainly, but I don't know. Like, I whatever it is, here's what we got to understand. No matter what they do, if it's a leadoff hitter, and we assume it will be a leadoff hitting outfielder that they go after, it's going to be better than what they've had. I mean, it's going to be better than what they've had at the top of the lineup, which is essentially nothing. So I think in general terms, seeing the Rosarena deal should probably make Royals fans optimistic. Seeing all the rumbles and rumorings and everything that they're going to be aggressive should make you optimistic. Question is, can they get a deal done and can they pick the right player? But there is a pretty low bar to clear, Tommy. Like, they're going to get better almost certainly no matter what they do. It will be better than what they have had so far, which has been next to nothing at that particular spot.
Yeah, so Bleacher Report last night had an article that came out that linked Arozarena to the Royals and that he would be a need that the Royals could absolutely, you know, fill the need that they had. And it'd be a great fit for, you know, basically what they're looking for and what the Rays are looking to fill on their end. Of course, that didn't end up happening. Here's the other thing I want to point out. So I've heard and I've seen the chatter on social media as it relates to Tommy Pham. And it goes back to what we talked about earlier this week about the potential attitude issues that Tommy Pham has. And we know that he's had some disciplinary things and he's got an attitude, a chip on his shoulder. He's gotten into fights. He's kind of had issues in the clubhouse, sometimes even with his own teammates. At the same time, you know, Jazz Chisholm is not a Boy Scout either. Like, there have been some dust-ups with him in his young career. He's a little brash. You know, he maybe not quite at the same level, but I'm not hearing any of that as it relates to like trying to acquire a talent the caliber of Jazz Chisholm Jr. for the Kansas City Royals. So I think it's all relative, you know, like it's the bottom line is that the talent is the talent. And I go back to what you said. I think it was on Monday when we were discussing Tommy Pham. Nothing is going to disrupt this Royals clubhouse this season.
I wouldn't worry about that at all.
I'm not concerned about that. And I think that, you know, regardless if it is Tommy Pham or if they swing for the fences for a guy like Jazz Chisholm Jr. Or, you know, I know the ESPN report a couple of days ago about Brent Rooker, or if it's Taylor Ward or whoever, you know, they end up acquiring. And I do think, like I mentioned yesterday, and I know you're on board with this too, I think that they're going to swing as large as they can with the ammunition that they've got ready to go before the trade deadline. I think that they're going to go primarily for not only talent that can help them out right now, but really try to get as much control long-term as they possibly can.
Yeah. I think you can do both for sure. I just, you know, Pham is a guy that makes so much sense in the short term that it's, you know, it's hard not to imagine. And he was on full display in that Royals series. He had a combined over those three games. He had a combined 5 hits. He was not as good, you know, in the Texas series, but he is just so much better at that particular spot than what you've had that you could make the case for that. And it probably doesn't cost you, but that doesn't mean you can't also go after Rooker. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mean you can't also go after somebody else. Doesn't mean you can't also go look to add a bullpen arm, which to our discussion yesterday is something I think we could all agree would be a positive for this team. Is it as glaring a hole anymore as the top of the lineup? No, it's not. But that doesn't mean you can't do all of these things. Again, if you're the Royals, and I know we've had some listeners and some commenters disagree with me on this, and that's totally fine, because normally I'm not in this camp, but I am this year for this team. What are you waiting for? Like, what are you holding out hope for? Not only in the sense of how long it's been and how miserably the rebuild has gone since the last postseason, you've got this gift horse right here. You're in contention. You have one of the best and deepest starting rotations in baseball. You've got perhaps baseball's brightest young star. You've got a Hall of Famer on the roster in Salvador Perez. Like, what would be the reason to wait? And if it's because you think it will make them lose games down the road, again, they've done nothing but lose games for the last almost decade here. So, like, that's already been happening. You're not like, you're what are we afraid of with, oh, well, God, it could make them bad if they trade some of these players. And I'm like, God, they've been bad. There was literally no sign of hope outside of Bobby Witt Jr. in this system for the last 3 years. I mean, it's been Bobby Witt Jr. and like nothing else. Brady Singer's been a nice story this year, right? But all of those picks, it's not working. So what are we afraid of? This is it. This is the chance. And this is a chance, again, I call it the two-year window. But with a couple of frugal off seasons, obviously, it can turn around and be extended. And if they make some money and they're trying to build a new stadium, and maybe John Sherman will actually spend more money than the Glass family did over the years, and they can stay more competitive in the free agent market than they have over time. But I just don't think there's much risk in going all in now, because I think that the bad that people are afraid of has been the reality now for the last 7 or 8 seasons. So, like, what are you afraid of going? Like, you think it's going to fall apart? We've had, you know, 3/4 of a season, not even. That's all the good that there has been since the World Series.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I think that the longer that this goes on and the closer that we get to the deadline and the longer that they not only stay in contention, but they continue to, move up in the standings and they solidify their place, not only in the wild card, but also battling for potentially the division, then yeah. It wasn't that long ago that I'll admit I was an advocate for standing pat for potentially as long as you needed to, you know, and just see how it goes with the team that you have. And if you make the playoffs, great. If you need to start looking at what 2025 might look like, great. But now with the way that they entered into the All-Star break, the way they came out of the All-Star break, et cetera, let's go all in. Let's push our cards, you know, let's put our chips in the middle. Let's see who we can acquire and let's go. Let's try to make it happen. Let's try to bring in some big names. I think that as we've discussed before, the farm system will be a little bit of a hindrance as far as who you can potentially bring in because it is fairly barren. I wonder with some of the names that we've mentioned, kind of what that return will look like who you have to give up to be able to bring them in, especially with what we saw with Randy Arozarena just a few hours ago. That does, I think, throw a curveball a little bit. I don't want to say it throws a wrench in the plans.
Well, it makes you optimistic because it just, the Royals can make that deal.
It throws a curveball. I don't know right now. It definitely that price tag was lower for Arozarena. Like, I think the Royals could have matched a deal like that to get Arozarena to their team. So it's like, so, okay, where do we go now? What does everything look like? Is that an outlier or is that a trend of things to come as we move closer to the deadline?
If you're a Royals fan, you hope that is an indicator of this thing. I mean, that's all I can say is you hope that that's an indicator of things. But look, Mitchell probably would not get traded unless it was a blockbuster deal. And again, he's the Royals' top prospect, but he's like outside the top 50 of Major League Baseball still. So I would say he's very far from untouchable. I would say the only untouchable player that I would imagine is Caglione, who they just drafted, because they could see him, and I think you project him as a part of the club next year, right? You would expect an advanced college bat like that to be able to step in a best-case scenario, like at next year. So he's not going anywhere. Everybody else is kind of on the table. I don't know if they can already trade draft picks. Like, I don't know how all that works since they've made those changes. I wish the Royals would have traded for Randy Arozarena. That's one half of my brain. The other half says, boy, I hope that's a sign of things to come because the market just opened up a great deal. If it is, the Royals can afford a lot more players if that's the price tag for that kind of player. 869-1240, what do you think, Royals fans? You can chime in on the IHOP hotline. You can leave us your video comments as well on Facebook or YouTube. Thanks for watching on 12 News Connected. Thanks for listening on KFH and the Odyssey app. It's all Brockton Caster. We'll be right back with more Sports Daily.
.975 and 1240 KFH. It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Chiefs camp, first day in pads, and wouldn't you know it, Kingsley Suamataya gets first team reps. Okay.
I'm telling you, it's not going to be worked out until, like, maybe week number one. Maybe.
Well, it'll be worked out before then because they'll start practicing. But I get what you're saying. It'll go deep in there. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what the best case scenario is. Well, I think I do know I think the best case scenario is that Morris and Suamataya are your starting tackles in some combination. I think that would be your best case scenario. But it's okay. Like, none of this is concerning, I wouldn't say. I had just become a little optimistic with like, oh, hey, well, maybe Wanya Morris has taken this thing over, which would have been awesome. That would be pretty cool to see, but doesn't hurt my feelings that your highly drafted rookie instead of your highly drafted second year player is turning eyes and getting a start. And maybe it all means absolutely nothing, Tommy, and it's too early in camp, which is the most likely scenario. But hey, we're gonna dissect it anyway, because there's not a lot of things that we see for the Chiefs that are going to be any sort of weakness. The wide receivers, I am just like, the more and the more I think about it, the more and more bullish I get on the potential for this Chiefs offense this year. Now that we know Rashee Rice, well, we don't know this, but now that it appears Rashee Rice could get delayed and maybe that doesn't even happen for a while, if he's there all year with Worthy and Brown and Kelsey, and maybe Kadarius Toney is a total gadget player, like, it's just going to be ridiculous for Patrick Mahomes in the offense. Everybody in the world can see this. Like, we all see this coming, except apparently the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, I don't know who that player was that had the Patrick Mahomes puppet. I don't know how organized that is. What are we doing here? Like, what are you thinking? You can have it. You certainly can't let it get on video that you have it. I've got no problem making fun of the opposition and having fun in the dog days of training camp, but you cannot let that get public that you have that puppet. I mean, come on now. You don't think Patrick Mahomes has seen that by now? You don't think Patrick Mahomes is going to have a little something for you?
Well, in those regular season games? Did you actually follow the story about what happened, like how it came about?
No, I just saw the video.
Okay, so there's a little bit of background to it where I do think it provides a little bit of context. It doesn't defend it, because if you can't, like, you can't let that be filmed. It was a fan that brought it to training camp. It was not the property of a player on the Raiders. A fan brought it to training camp and was playing with it on the sidelines or behind the ropes. And the players were signing autographs or talking to the fans after the practice or, you know, whatever. And apparently, allegedly, this fan was trying to get players to engage with the puppet, and nobody would, except for one player. And this one player took it, like, out of the hands of the fan. Of course, in today's day and age, everybody has their phones, pulled out their phones and recorded it. So that he should have never done that, because yes, it gets posted on social media. Patrick Mahomes finds out about it, but there was a lot of discussion about, like, the Raiders have had they brought it to training camp and they've had this in their locker room. No, they didn't have it in their locker room. A fan brought it to training camp. The fan, I'm not trying to defend the Raiders here. I'm just, like, telling you, like, context is kind of important, I think, in this actual situation.
Trey Taylor, that player, apparently made the puppet say, "I'm a B word." Am I allowed to say that? Is that one clear?
I'd stay away from it.
Okay. I'm a B word. So I don't care what the tweet, I think, has been deleted. I don't know if it's all been deleted, but it's too late now. Like, I don't, like, even if you're a Raiders fan, like, is that a plant? Raiders fans, you don't know better than that? Like, come on now. What do you think's going to happen now? I mean, Mahomes is going to throw for 1,000 and about 10 touchdowns on the Raiders this year now. I mean, he was probably going to do that anyway. Now he's for sure going to do it. And he'll have something for him, and he'll have fun with it. Listen, personally, I'm glad this happened. It's comedy. It's motivation. I'm here for it, but it's a mistake. And you got to be smarter than that if you're the Raiders or the players. Could you imagine? I don't know. Who's Trey Taylor, right? Is he young, good? I don't know anything about him. Could you imagine being one of the leaders on the team and seeing that video? How do you think that conversation went behind the scenes? Like, are you freaking kidding me, idiot? Like, what are you doing here? Do you know what that's going to mean for us? You know how bad a day at the office that's going to be for us? Like, why are we doing this? I am a believer, and I know some people aren't, all bulletin board material. I'm like, no. Like, let's think of our own lives. We are the most motivated, right? Most of us, especially, like, aggressive people, driven people, when we feel slighted, right? You get slighted. Somebody doesn't believe in you. It motivates you to be, coaches have been using that trick since the beginning of time, right? Tell the kid they suck so they get mad and play better. That's the oldest trick in the book. Bulletin board material is Patrick Mahomes. Like, for a guy who's, you know, won all the Super Bowls and all the awards, finding motivation sometimes doesn't come naturally. There you go. For at least two of the games this year. Just what a big mistake.
Yeah, but the difference is motivation does come naturally when you're playing the Raiders. That's why I don't.
Sure,
I didn't get really fired up.
Not for Mahomes to, like, you don't think that Mahomes is sure going to see does. That video and not have something coming for
well,
him?
Well, yeah.
Of course he will.
No, absolutely. But I don't think it, yeah, it might take the hate level from a 99 to a 100.
There you go.
Right? Like, it doesn't take it from a 0 to a 100 or a 5 to a 1. Like, it's already basically maxed out. It already was because it's the Chiefs and the Raiders. They've hated each other since the NFL was founded. That's the way it's always been. There is an inherent hatred between those two franchises. There always has been. And when you put on the uniform for either team, you absolutely despise the other one. That's just the way that it is. There's always added motivation to play the Raiders when you are the Chiefs and vice versa. And so Trey Thomas holding up a puppet of Kermit the Frog, wearing a Chiefs jersey and with the Patrick Mahomes hair, like whatever, like, yeah, like that was stupid. I didn't think it was funny. I think it's a tired trope. I thought it was funny when Patrick Mahomes first burst in to the league. Yeah, his voice kind of sounds like Kermit. That was funny 6 years ago. Like, it's nothing new. Ha, 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 he kind of sounds like Kermit. Okay, let's move on.
The dressed up puppet. It's a fan. I mean, from a fan's perspective, that's...
So,
that's,
yeah, like, But I saw it, and I'm like, okay, like, whatever. Like, I don't... For me, that's not, like,
yeah,
egregious
but you're a Chiefs fan.
Bulletin board.
No,
but
I know,
it's not
but you're
egregious,
a Chiefs fan.
I already hate the Raiders. It's right. Hard for me to hate them any more than I already do. It's not like, wow, I used to have a lot of respect for them, but now I'm really
no,
mad
no, no,
now.
No.
Like, it's, I already.
And Mahomes doesn't think that way either. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying now you've given him a reason to, like, want to go.
He already
deep
had a reason.
Them. No, I know, but now you're giving me another reason to just want to find worthy over the top on that particular safety. So that, you know, we can get that moment. He's that kind of athlete. That's what we love about Patrick Mahomes. I have no issue with the fan doing it. I mean, you know, you take your shots. What else are you going to do? You know, the Chiefs are going to beat you twice this year. Like, you've got rival players and all that, but if you're the player and you're just trying to have fun with the fan, I'm not sitting here saying, like, I can't believe he did it. I just think it's funny that now we're going to get a reaction in a game somehow from Mahomes about this. I would think, and because he just kind of files that stuff away and he brings it back out later. And I'm here for it. I'm here for all the rivalry stuff. Like, bring it on. I think it's great. You know, let's have some fun in this thing.
The ones that are, like, head scratching to me are situations when players on rival teams are giving an interview or in a press conference, or they're answering questions from a reporter, and they are, you know, downgrading the Chiefs or Patrick Mahomes, or they're making comments. This was, yeah, like, he used the B word, or like, what, like, all of that, whatever. It was an interaction with a fan as opposed to a microphone in his face with the media that, you know, 100%. Is going to go everywhere and be on every news outlet and ESPN and all of that, right? Like, this was a fan bringing a doll to a training camp practice, and the player was trying to have fun with a fan. Okay. Like, yeah, in today's day and age, yeah, you got to assume everybody has a camera on their phone and they're filming everything. It's going to go viral, but, like, it's different than a reporter asking the guy a question and him calling Patrick
different
Mahomes.
It's different than Burrowhead. Yeah.
Right.
I totally agree with all of that.
It's different than the Raiders taking a victory lap around Arrowhead.
Correct.
Right? It's different than all of those other.
It is,
you know,
but it's something, and it's July 26th. And I would bet you this, that this is filed away and we revisit this during a game in some capacity from Patrick Mahomes. This will be remembered by number 15. That would be my bet. And that makes it better for me.
I'm not at all suggesting that Patrick Mahomes shouldn't take motivation from it. And I already know that he will, because that's what he does. This is the same guy that was ranked below where he thought that he should have been ranked in, I think, what was it, top quarterbacks in the league, and was counting on his fingers, you know, during a game at one point, a couple years ago. Like, he will pull motivation from wherever he can, absolutely anywhere he can. That's what he does. That's what makes him the greatest. And so I'm not suggesting that he should just, you know, ignore it and not try to pull motivation from it. Do whatever you need to do to win, right? And so I'm fine with that. I just think that I do, as much as I hate the Raiders, I do kind of cut Trey Thomas a little bit of slack here.
I do too, because he was just having fun with the fan. But that doesn't change the fact that Mahomes will use it, and that'll be fun for the rest of us. And it's fun. Maybe not. Maybe Trey Thomas picks off Patrick Mahomes and, you know, does a Kermit impression or something. I mean, I'm here for all of it. Just give me all that juice. Like, I like it. That's what I love. And it's, you know, it's July 26th, and we need it. But it was certainly going to get overreacted to yesterday, because that's what happens with anything like the Chiefs. Jerry Jones talking about Patrick Mahomes. Using a Mahomes analogy, what the hell's going on in Dallas? What, we haven't talked about this at all. Dak Prescott, I don't know if you heard his comments. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what is happening for a team that wins like 13 games every year. There's a disaster brewing here. Let's talk about that as we, you know, make our way around the NFL. That's coming Sports Daily. It's all Brockton Caster. All this football coverage on KFH is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. We'll have an HTO giveaway coming a little later in the show as well. More on the Royals. But we'll talk some Cowboys football, because it looks like a disaster is brewing there in Oxnard, California. That's next on Sports Daily.
.975 and 1240 KFH. The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily. We are talking NFL. We're making our way around the league a little bit in training camp. We haven't done a lot of this, thanks mostly to the Royals and the amount of time appropriately we need to give to them this year. But there are interesting things happening in other places across the league outside of, you know, puppets and things like that. A couple of things for me, Tommy, that I'm sort of getting a feel for early in training camp. One, this has been this Chiefs offense thing. Like, the Chief, I feel like the Chiefs offense is going to just go absolutely ballistic this year. Two, I think it's going to work with Harbaugh and the Chargers. I think it's going to work. I don't know, like, how much to what degree this year, but long term, I think that fit is going to be there and it's going to work. The other one is that it's not going to work for the Cowboys. And this isn't like earth-shattering news for me. I've been on this. The problem with the Cowboys has been for now about 3 years is that they're good, but they're not good enough. They haven't done anything to put themselves over the hump, and now they're three-star players who happen to play, you know, three of the most important positions in football, who you could make a case for two of them are the best at their position in football, certainly in the conversation. And Micah Parsons and CeeDee Lamb, who are both young players, are at the Cowboys are at this crossroads. And Jerry Jones, they're all three wanting new contracts. Jerry Jones talked about all that yesterday. They sort of opened up his availability, and we know Jerry Jones likes to talk. And he made the comparison of basically being an option quarterback, and the front office right now is at that position of an option quarterback where they have to decide to run it or to pitch it. And then for some reason he brought up, sounds a lot like Patrick Mahomes, doesn't it? Even though Patrick Mahomes is not an option quarterback, not even close to an option quarterback. I mean, I guess he does do that occasionally when he takes off and runs it. So maybe that's where he was going. But I think he's just talking in circles more than anything else. because they don't know what they're going to do. They don't know what to do as an organization. And while we can all make fun of that, appropriately, I suppose, they are winning like 13 games a year these days. They're winning tons of games. No other team in football, I don't think, would we be having this same conversation if they were having that level of success of like, should they just blow it up? Like, nobody's saying that about the Bengals right now, right? With their holdouts and their situations, like, they should just blow it up. But we've been kind of wondering that about the Cowboys for a while. My problem with the Cowboys isn't this particular situation. It's that they've literally done nothing the last 3 years to make themselves better and to put them over the edge to go and get that Super Bowl. Dak Prescott had arguably his best year of his career last year. CeeDee Lamb is a superstar. Micah Parsons is a game wrecker. Either you make the pitch or hold the ball. You either keep running this back or you have to blow it up. You can't half-ass it anymore if you're Dallas. And it's very strange to have a team that has seen so much regular season success be in this situation, because there really aren't any other options here. You either just pay these guys and continue to run it back, or you blow it up, right? Because they're not doing anything elsewhere. Bringing in Zeke Elliott as your only notable offseason addition is not going all in here. Like, it's not.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, by the way, if Cowboys fans take a look at the state of the country and what's happening in our politics, presidential-wise, and what's happened over the last few years when it comes to debates and press conferences and things like that, and it doesn't really phase them because they've had to listen to Jerry Jones talk for the last decade plus.
It was a Jerry Jones is really old joke.
That too, but I watched Jerry Jones, you know, speak and what you just referenced, comparing himself to an option quarterback and, you know, talking about how that's like Patrick Mahomes. And then there was also another point where, you know, somebody asked him about CeeDee Lamb's extension and he basically chided the reporter into wanting to give himself some credit, like, give me some credit here, you know? And I'm just like, this is like a presidential debate, like a presidential news conference. Like, and so to me, it's like, man, this is like the state of our country right now. It reminded me of what we see in today's news cycle all the time. It's not super shocking anymore, just because we deal with it on a daily basis outside of sports. But this is what Cowboys fans, you know, have dealt with for a long time. And so unfortunately, when you're not a Cowboys fan, it's a little bit more shocking in that realm of sports ownership, because that's the leader of the team. And a lot of, while there are not great owners out there in every sport, there aren't a lot of owners. There really aren't any owners that are like Jerry Jones to that extent and that have the kind of power and influence that Jerry Jones has. And so when people that are fans of other teams and other sports see Jerry Jones speak, it's kind of jarring. And at least it is for me, because I'm like, wow, I don't think I've ever heard like Clark Hunt talk like that. You know, I don't think I've ever heard John Sherman talk like that. You know what I mean? So like, you're a Cowboys fan, so you can speak to that a little bit
more. I will say this. I
wonder if Cowboys fans are just like kind of desensitized to it.
No, they're sick of it. But I would tell you this. Jerry Jones to the players is one of the best owners around. Like, is Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys ever making it into player surveys as being cheap? No, he's not. So
can I tell you something, though? Every single time, and I'll be critical of you here for a second. Every single time we have ever talked about Jerry Jones on this program, you're a Jerry Jones apologist.
I'm not an apologist. I'm saying Jerry Jones players
defender. Every time, because every time anything. Sure, that's great. But every time there's anything critical about his decision making or about the fact they haven't won a Super Bowl in 30 years,
I started this conversation.
It always goes back. You always go back to, well, he's great to the players. Cool.
He's great to the players. So that's what I mean. There's two sides to Jerry Jones. You were talking about the fans and the players. Let me take a break because you absolutely just put words in my mouth. So let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll get to this. It's a short segment here. And we'll do that. We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up here at KFH. Always enjoy a cup of coffee from Prairie Fire Coffee. We'll have an HTO giveaway in the second hour. We'll continue this conversation. I am definitely not a Jerry Jones apologist. I try to bring context to Jerry Jones as an owner. I'm a Cowboys fan. There ain't a Cowboys fan on the world that's a Jerry Jones. We miss Jimmy Johnson. That's way wrong, but we'll talk about it when we come back. 869-1240 Sports Daily, all Brockton Caster. Don't go away.
In Odyssey Sports Station, this is 97.5 and 1240 KFH, KNSS HD2 Clearwater, Wichita's most listened to sports radio. Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Let's set up our HTO Text to Win contest. You can enter the contest. All you got to do is text the keyword T to short code 20357. That'll get you a free iced tea. More than 20 flavors from any of the three Metro HDO locations in Wichita or Derby. Also get you a free rain coffee, one of each. All you got to do is text the keyword TEA to 20357. Good luck, everybody. So we're talking about the NFL, and this is, you know, an unplanned segment, but I think a really interesting segment as Jerry Jones finds himself in the news as he has three high-profile, Hall of Fame-type caliber players, you know, threatening to hold out all at once. Cowboys are in this purgatory and have been for a long, long time with Jerry Jones. Tommy thinks I'm a Jerry Jones apologist. I'm not a Jerry Jones apologist. I'm an observer that thinks there's a lot of layers to Jerry Jones. And I think if we're talking about successful ownership, there's a lot of different things that go into that. And I would be curious before I start, you know, going through this from my perspective, Tommy, what you feel like makes an owner a successful owner.
Championships make a successful owner, number one. Okay. Clearly, revenue, money, attendance, fan base, sales, merchandise, all of the above.
Okay.
That is a clear indicator of a successful owner. I think longevity is the success of an owner. I think relationship with the community that they are in is a indicator of success of an owner. I think there's a lot of factors.
Do you think those things make it? I know it makes it. Do you think it makes them a good owner?
If they're good at all of those things, if they have success in all of those things, yeah, I do. I think that makes that person a good owner.
Would you call Clark Hunt a good owner?
Yes, I would call Clark Hunt a great owner.
Would you call Jerry Jones a good owner?
I would call Jerry Jones a influential owner. I don't know if
What's
I would call Jerry Jones a good
What's the
owner.
Difference between those two?
Jerry Jones has not won a Super Bowl in 30 years. I think that has a lot to do with it.
They have the same number of Super Bowls as owners.
Right.
How many did Clark Hunt win before Patrick Mahomes got there?
How long had Clark Hunt been the actual principal owner before?
I don't know
Patrick
the answer
Mahomes
to that. I'm not sure. What is the answer to that question?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I don't know when he took over, you know, day-to-day operations of the team. I mean, it's been Jerry Jones. And that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, it's the Hunt family. And, yeah, Clark's the principal guy. But you know, like Mark Donovan's the president of the team, has a ton of control. Brett Veach is the general manager. He makes the football decisions. Jerry Jones is the judge, jury, and executioner of that franchise.
For the most part, right. His son is the general manager and has more power than people give him credit for. And they did bring in a player personnel guy. It's why they're one of the best drafting teams in football. Contractually, Jerry Jones' fault is that he is so this is where it gets interesting for me. And this is the dynamic I've always talked about with Jerry Jones as a fan. Yeah, I just want championships. I want decisiveness. I want all of these things. The reality in football is we prop up owners. How many, you know, Robert Kraft, who's more responsible for the Patriots winning Super Bowls, Robert Kraft or Tom Brady and Bill Belichick? Who's more responsible for the Chiefs winning Super Bowls, Clark Hunt or Patrick Mahomes? Who's more responsible for the Cowboys winning Super Bowls, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, and Troy Aikman or Jerry Jones? So I think there's a lot of layers to it. The problem for Jerry Jones to me has always been that he is widely considered one of the best owners to play for. I know people who have worked for him outside of football. It would tell you he's one of the best bosses who cares more about his employees than anybody they've ever
That's
seen.
Great.
No, listen, let me finish. The NFL player team report cards, the Chiefs, F's all over the place from the Chiefs, facilities, locker room, treatment of families. Guess who has A's and B's all across the board? And this is what I'm talking about. It goes multi-layered. The Cowboys have three Super Bowls with Jerry Jones. Three. The Chiefs have three Super Bowls with Clark Hunt. The problem for Dallas has been they hang on to coaches too long. They can't. They've just lived in this purgatory. They cannot ever decide what it is that they need to do. That's been Jerry Jones's problem. And now if you're looking at it in this offseason, he got a long history of giving guys big, long contracts when he should not give them big, long contracts. Zeke Elliott, the most recent, but there's been a whole lot of them over the years. The current problem for Jerry Jones is he cannot decide which direction the organization needs to go. Do you get rid of Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott and you let these other players walk? Or do you, as he put it earlier in the offseason, actually go all in? But by all the success metrics of an owner, the Cowboys have been the most valuable sports franchise in the world for a very long time. Do you know what he bought the Cowboys for?
Not much money.
$100 million. $9 billion. Most valuable franchise on the planet. So by a championship metric, who has more championships than Jerry Jones as an owner?
Yeah.
Patriots, I think that's it. Yeah. Who makes more money than Jerry Jones as an owner? Nobody. Right. So you look at all of this, and this is where it gets really interesting for me. It's a lot of the things that make him one of the great owners hold them back from winning championships. And as a fan, I just want to win championships. It's like, well, crap, figure it out. Go all in or don't. I've been of the belief for the Cowboys that they should have blown this thing up a long time ago. Yeah, they're winning 13 games a year, but I can sit here and tell you right now, just like I could last offseason and the one before it, they're not winning a Super Bowl, whether they sign those three potential Hall of Famers or not. And so it's this strange dynamic with Dallas. It is so strange. And I think Clark Hunt's a great owner too. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a great owner. Absolutely. Bringing in Andy Reid, smartest decision he could have ever made, because that's within when you get Patrick Mahomes. Like, he gets it. But let's not pretend like it's all been bad and Jerry Jones is just this awful owner who's just the worst
never
owner in
that.
Football. No, I know, but
never,
a lot of people
said that.
But a lot of people do say that.
And so here's the thing. I think that you have misconstrued my point entirely. This is my intention is not a bash Jerry Jones opinion. It's not at that at all. Like, I think that Jerry Jones has done a lot of good, not only for the Cowboys over the course of his tenure running that organization. He's done a lot of good for the NFL in general. He's done a lot. And I know the players love him. And all of that is all well and good and true and everything. For me, this is a criticism. And there are going to be people who are listening or watching our show right now who are Cowboys fans that are going to take issue with this. This is on you. This is on the Cowboys fan base at this point, because you continue to buy what Jerry Jones is selling. You continue to do that year after year after year after year. This is a team that has not won a Super Bowl since Jimmy Johnson was the coach of the team. You go year after year and you renew your season tickets for a team that you know is not going to win a Super Bowl. You know that.
Tommy,
you
know, hang on.
Let me finish. So this is a team where you had coming into this year, there are these high profile star players, Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, others that are entering the final year of their contract. The ambiguous nature of what's going to happen with Mike McCarthy. There were no notable offseason acquisitions. They didn't do anything to make themselves better. Ezekiel Elliott doesn't move the needle at all coming in to be the backup running back. They literally did nothing to get better. This after Jerry Jones said, and I quote, "We're going all in." They did nothing for this season. You know what Jerry Jones also said yesterday at training camp when he was with Stephen Jones, his son? They both said that the season ticket holders renewed their season tickets at the highest and fastest rate than any other team in the National Football League. That's what the fan base did when the team did nothing in the offseason to get better to win a Super Bowl. This is on the fan base.
It's not on the – did you stop? Did you just refuse to watch the Chiefs when they went – what did they go, 50 years between their Super Bowls? Were you not a fan as a kid when they were terrible?
I'm not saying I wasn't a fan.
You just blame the Cowboys fans for being fans. Why would you blame the Cowboys fans for being fans?
What I'm saying is that, like, in the conversation that we had just a few moments ago before the break, I bring up the criticisms that I have about Jerry Jones and what he said at training camp yesterday. And the first thing out of your mouth is, you know, Jerry Jones takes really good care of the players, because that's what the Cowboys fan base does. It's an immediate apology about Jerry Jones. It's an immediate context before anybody can be critical of Jerry Jones. It's, by the way,
the players love him. I think you need to pull 10 Cowboys fans, 10, and see how many of them are fond of Jerry Jones, because it would be probably one, maybe two. I am not trying to... I'm just saying he's been very successful in this league by a lot of accounts, except lately that one. He does have 3 Super Bowls, has the same number as the Chiefs do. So I it's just, it's infuriating as a fan to see this purgatory. But again, the Cowboys are put on this pedestal and observed this way for all the right reasons. They deserve it. They embrace it. They want it. It is supposed to be the big and most popular. But what are Cowboys fans supposed to do? What would you say? If it's the Cowboys fans' fault, what should they do?
Not buy season tickets? Like, let your pocketbook do the talking?
Is that what Chiefs fans should have done when they went 50 years without a Super Bowl?
So I can only speak for myself. The year specifically that I remember that I absolutely made that decision was the year, probably the worst year in the history of the franchise, when they went 2-14 and Javon Belcher shot himself in the parking lot of the practice facility at Arrowhead, and fans were wearing bags over their heads and people were renting airplanes to fly over the stadium with, they were hanging banners that said fire Scott Pioli. They were absolutely fed up with the direction of the team. They were absolutely fed up with the fact that the Chiefs hadn't won a Super Bowl at that point in 40 years. There was no meaningful direction. There was literally no strategy to make it back to the Super Bowl. There was no meaningful additions. You know what happened the very next season? Clark Hunt hired Andy Reid. And here we are.
But that's because they were 2-14, not because the fans were upset. I mean,
was tied into it?
I think that probably the two wins had more to do with it. What were ticket sales like the next year? I would have to ask that. I'm not sure. I don't know. But I'm to say fans should just be fair weather fans, and things, if they're not going well, you should stop being a fan.
I'm saying trying to do your part to hold the ownership accountable, and, you know, say, look, like, I'm a Cowboys fan and I always will be, but like, I can't financially support this team. Like, I'm not going to buy tickets. I can't go. I'll watch it on TV, but I can't spend my money. I'm not going to go and do that sort of thing. Because, like, I just don't believe in the direction that this team is going, and we can't. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to go look and see what the attendance, I guess, was like for the Chiefs in those times of their struggles.
I remember I went to one game that year. I was at a game that year. I was given free tickets. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone. And I went, and there were not a lot of people there. I remember that. There were quite a few empty seats at that one game. And I remember there were quite a few fans that were sitting around me that had paper bags that they were wearing over their heads during that particular game. I think maybe they were playing the Browns in that game. They lost, I believe, because they were obviously really bad. They were 2-14 that year. So I don't remember, man, who was the starting quarterback that year? Was that Brody Croyle that year? It was bad. That the whole thing stunk. And again, I'm not suggesting the Cowboys are not a 2-14 team. No. That's not my point. I'm just saying that like it got to the point, and it was more in my mind, it was more about the lack of any kind of meaningful direction and strategy for the franchise, and year after year after year of doing the same thing and just like feeling like they were settling. It got to a boiling point, at least for me, where I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's not that I can't support the team. It's not going to be a fan. It's just like, I can't like spend my dollars to support the team anymore.
It's amazing what a great quarterback will do for a coach, for an organization, for everything. And that's where we circle back to with the Cowboys. What do you do if you're the Cowboys? What do you do if you're Jerry Jones in this dilemma? You've got three players, Dak Prescott yesterday taking a tone he's never taken before about potentially playing somewhere else. He's already making $40 million, by the way. He's still under contract, by the way. He's already done all of these things. The other two, a little bit different. They have not had their big payday. Dak's had his big payday. We've been through this same thing before with Dak Prescott. So what do you do if you're Jerry Jones? What is the smart owner thing to do? Walk away from a 13-win team or blow it up and blow it up or continue to ride it out? And by the way,
absolutely blow it up. I mean, like that he should have blown it up years ago.
They won 13 games the last 3 years. I mean, that's easy to say. I'm not saying I think that was the right decision at the time, too. I don't think they should have signed Dak. But how do you walk away from 13 wins? You know what I mean? That's easier said than done. What team in the history of sports, give me one example of a team that has ever done anything like that? Because I don't think you'd find one. And that's the difficulty here. And I know, again, I agree with you. I think it's time to blow it up. But
I think that the circumstances surrounding, and you, it's unique to Jerry Jones because of his position and the way that he operates that team. If it was, you know, if Jerry Jones was Robert Kraft, it'd be different because Robert Kraft is the owner in the traditional sense. And there is a general manager that has the football decision-making ability, where Robert Kraft is just the owner of the team and does what a traditional owner does. With Jerry Jones, he is so linked into everything football related with that organization that, and his advanced age also plays into it, where 13 wins doesn't matter. A Super Bowl matters. That's all. That's the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it particularly, you cannot say that 13 wins, even if no other team in the history of professional sports has ever blown up a team that's won that amount of games, or relatively speaking in their respective sport, has ever blown up their roster before. That's different in this situation because of who the owner is and what he is trying to accomplish before he kicks the bucket. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, so, and again, the Chiefs are an interesting draw because we all follow the Chiefs, obviously. The Chiefs from 2013 to 2018, 11-9, 11-12, 10-12 wins. Should they have blown it up after they went, 10-6 in 2017? After they went 12-4 in 2016?
They
lost
made
the divisional round?
Hey.
They made a significant change
at quarterback, that is the cornerstone position in the league. Correct. And they knew that they needed to upgrade at that position if they wanted to go from 9, 10, 11 wins to a Super Bowl champion.
I agree. And that is the interesting part. And that's an Andy Reid thing, by the way. That's an Andy Reid decision, I think, as much as anything else. But it takes things like that. And look, they went with Dak Prescott when Tony Romo was very much still a viable quarterback in the league.
Alex Smith was a viable quarterback in the league.
They went with Tony Romo when they very much had a viable quarterback with, Drew Bledsoe. It's not like they haven't done it. They've done it. They just haven't done it with Dak. And so thank God the Chiefs are awesome and they're the team that I've, follow professionally now, and I can do, because I'm telling you, being a Cowboys fan, It's like it literally is purgatory. Like, what do you do? They win 12 games and a playoff game every year.
You know what I think?
And you know that it's not good enough. And it's like, what could they do? What could they have done this offseason? My thing has not been necessarily a blow it up with that. It's been get a different head coach in there. That has been my offer, you know, my offer to the universe to try to do something different, because Dak has never really been the reason they're not winning a Super Bowl. It's been a lot of things, but he's been good. Like, he's been fine in this league. Now, do they need to sign him and extend him again? Probably not. And then you get to the other two, with CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons. And if you're not going to re-sign Dak, why would you re-sign those guys? Like, what? Unless Trey Lance is your answer.
Yeah. Dak is in a weird position because he, in my opinion, he's not the reason that they're not winning a Super Bowl, but he probably won't be the reason that they will win a Super Bowl
either.
Like,
but we can
he's
say,
in that
but,
weird.
But we can say that about a lot of quarterbacks in this league.
I think that another major difference, and it's just kind of the language that we use, and you actually just used it seconds ago when it relates to the Cowboys. And I know Mike McCarthy is there as the head coach. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that you can say what else could they have done when you say the Cowboys. I think you have to say what else could he have done, because it's Jerry Jones. It's not even Stephen Jones. It's not Mike McCarthy. It literally, it's what could Jerry have done? Where, like, when Kansas City made the decision to draft Patrick Mahomes and to move on from Alex Smith and to, you know, have that whole transition, that was a brain trust of multiple people that have high levels of football IQ in different parts of the game, whether you're talking about front office and contracts and schemes and development and all of that. This is
problem,
Jerry Jones.
The
and
problem
it's a, it's is an authoritarian.
I think the only thing he, you know, as far as player personnel still controls is the contracts. And that's what they continuously get wrong, because he doesn't make roster decisions anymore. Will McClay's done that for a long time now. Again, that's why they draft so well, right? They that's why they have all these great players, because they have drafted well since they made that decision a long time ago. But Jones makes the calls on the contracts and these things, and that's what they continue to get wrong. And the coaches. My God, Jason Garrett for how many years? Mike McCarthy for how many years? So again, like, this was to put a bow on everything. You know, all those people that work for him would probably tell you he's a great owner, right? He's loyal to his people. He takes good care of his people. Things that we would value in most, you know, most places. His the value of his team is high. But this one thing, and it's going to be his legacy. It'll be his legacy, at least for Cowboys fans. It's not the good he's done for the league. It's that they didn't win a fourth Super Bowl. What standard is that? That's what's so crazy about it. But here we go again, and they're not going to this year. And I don't know what the short path to a Super Bowl is. It's wild. And he shouldn't have said what he said yesterday. But he doesn't care. It's Jerry Jones. That's the other thing about him. He didn't care. It's, hey, everybody look at me and don't look everywhere else. Pay attention to me. But look over here while this is over here. A mess, I guess. What a mess there in Dallas right now. Go listen to the way Dak Prescott talked yesterday. That ain't good. And you know what? You're making $40 million a year. Get out there and play, buddy. You already got your raise.
By the way, CeeDee Lamb, not at camp.
No, I know.
He's holding out. You know, so like, there's a lot of things going on right now.
Yeah, and he's in the conversation as best receiver in football. Like, he's in that top, you know, three, four, five guys. Mike Parsons, same thing. At the second most position, perhaps, in football as pass rusher. It's crazy. Crazy time. Be thankful, Chiefs fans, that you got Patrick Mahomes and you don't have to worry about these things anymore. That's what good quarterback play does for you in this league. 869-1240. We'll come back. We'll look ahead to this Royals-Cubs series when we return. You know, it's not on the road. A little worrisome here. We'll talk about it when we return.
And 1240 KFH.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in, everybody. Royals baseball tonight right here on KFH will come your way. I think I said the Royals are on the road. They're not on the road yet. They finish out the homestand with the Cubs, and then they hit the road as we look to a series that I don't know what to make of the Cubs really this year. I know that, you know, they've got some decent starting pitchers in there, and I guess there's a little bit of I've seen two different starters for the Cubs listed for tonight's game, both Hendricks and Kodai Senga. So I'm not sure which of them is getting the start. I mean, Imanaga, I should say. Imanaga's been really good, and Assad's been good. And those two will pitch two of the games, but I'm seeing two different names in two different places. It should be Hendricks tonight, and he has not been good going up against Brady Singer. But this is your series, Singer, Lugo, Reagans, where you get your three, you know, your three guys here, and you hope that the Royals take advantage. Three more home games, then they hit the road for six straight. But it's, you know, first three of those six are against the White Sox. So again, it sort of goes back to that Diamondback series. I think that as annoying as the final game of that series were with the awful blown save, it didn't feel like it was some momentum buster or something like that in that series. And we'll find out. Right? Are they still as hot as they were when they come into this series against Chicago? We'll find out. I would say that I like their chances at a, you know, sweep here, at least two out of three. If they can't do that, now we're going to have a little bit of concern because it is going to be a tight playoff race. We know now the Mariners just added, that's a team that likely will be in the mix at least in that wild card. Maybe they win the division, but they'll at least be in the mix for the wild card. So there's a little bit of pressure while they continue to get ready and, you know, go toward the trade deadline and do all those things. That game gets going at 7 o'clock tonight. It will be good to see Brady Singer get back on the mound. Brady Singer, what an interesting story he has been this year. He has been, you know, good far more often than he has not been good this season. But he is capable of some not so good starts, but he has been relatively consistent. He gave up four runs a couple of times ago in that game in Boston. Then he was great against Chicago. He was great in Colorado. He's kind of, Tommy, been really good against bad teams, and not as good against good teams. If you kind of go look at his starts this year, he's dominated bad teams, and I don't want to say he's consistently struggled against good teams. He's just been far less dominant, which is not that crazy to think about, right? It's easier to pitch against bad teams. But Singer, with a game against the Cubs tonight, you would think the Cubs are not, you know, they're in the mix still. Not a great team, but this should be an opportunity for a good Brady Singer start, I would think.
Yeah, it should be. And then you look at the other side, and Kyle Hendricks has not had a good year. He's got an ERA that's approaching 7 for the Cubs. He's 2-8 this year, and he's got a whip that is approaching 1.5. So it's really been a season to forget up to this point for Kyle Hendricks. His last start was a loss. He only went 5 innings and gave up 3 runs on 3 hits, had 3 walks. He had that loss against the Diamondbacks on Saturday. So again, it's been a rough year for him. So the Royals have the opportunity to take advantage of that. That being said, Hendricks, in just a handful of starts against the Royals in the past, has pitched well against Kansas City. Hendricks is 2-0 with a 1.40 ERA. So he's pitched well against Kansas City in previous starts. So, you know, that is something to keep in mind as well. But I do think that knowing that Singer has been good against bad teams and bad against good teams, and the Cubs have, yeah, they've underperformed, you know, quite a bit this year. And knowing that Hendricks has had a bad season, I do like the Royals and I do like Singer tonight.
The Cubs are a little bit deceptive to me. I don't think I would call the Cubs a bad team. They are in last place in the NL Central, and I'm not sure I would call them a bad team. They have had pretty good pitching this year. They've struggled a little bit offensively, certainly. But again, a run differential that tells you there are far worse teams. So, like, I think that they're, I wouldn't even say they're a good team. I think they're at least an average team. It wasn't that long ago that they were thought of maybe as buyers in the thing. I don't want to be deceived there. I think we were deceived a little bit by Arizona going into the stretch, right? They were under 500. Well, they're white hot. Right.
Well,
now.
And they're the defending National League champions, right? Like, that was one thing I think that was forgotten about with Arizona going into this series.
The Cubs have been way better pitching, and maybe not Hendricks tonight, but everywhere else. Like, their pitching has been way better than Arizona's has this year. Their offense has struggled. So knowing that going into this series, you've got to lean into your big time 3 pitchers here to shut their offense down. In 3 games, shut them down like that. And that's where I look at this series, and it probably is advantageous to get those 3. It should be a series you absolutely take at least 2 or 3, probably a series you need to be thinking sweep here if you're the Royals. But it lines up bad offense against your 3 best pitchers. Shut them down. Take advantage of these 3 games. And as we look at it, that's what I would sort of suspect. And knowing that, you know, maybe the unders are a way to play these this weekend. I'm very curious to see with the Royals what happens offensively over the next 3 games. And you know, again, they're going up against a starting pitcher with like a 6 ERA tonight. But other than that, can they continue to stay hot? Is the Arizona final game just some outlier where you blew a save? Or does that, you know, kind of unravel on you? That'll be the thing to watch in this series, but it should be good. And yeah, it is 3 more. We may have had a connection issue there for just a second. Let's do this. Let's take a break. We're going to see what's going on here with the connection. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. It's all Brockton Caster. It's Sports Daily. We'll figure out what just happened. Something just happened. And we'll be right back.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster: wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
40 KFH.
Oh, man. I just look at Jerry Jones talking again today, or maybe this was some of from yesterday, about the dynamic there in Dallas and, you know, how he takes advice. And if he could write a check to win a Super Bowl, of course, he would write that check right now and all of these things. He's not the only one with major contract issues looming in NFL training camps. There are a lot of them. The 49ers have a couple of high profile ones. Brandon Ayuk's taking the headlines. Trent Williams, though, but that may be even more important. We've seen Jamar Chase and T. Higgins there in Cincinnati rumbling a little bit. I guess Tua is holding in, but still practicing. There are a lot of these, Tommy, across the league. And, you know, it sorts itself out most of the time. Man, when you get into some of these, though, like Dak Prescott, Tua, when we talk about quarterbacks, Brock Purdy's going to be there. You want to talk about a difficult decision to make in the NFL. And it's these resetting the market type quarterback. Like Trevor Lawrence hasn't done anything and resets the market. We've done it 100 times, and I go through this all the time. If you don't have a Hall of Famer or a future Hall of Famer at quarterback, you almost have no chance to win a Super Bowl in this league. And they're not everybody is that quarterback, but you got to keep paying them. Like it is a strange dynamic in the world of football to have to make the quarterback decision. And I say it all the time, like Chiefs fans never take this for granted. Like the Patriots fans hopefully never took it for granted to have a quarterback that caliber that's willing to do team friendly deals and do all these things. I mean, if Patrick Mahomes wanted to, he could sit here every offseason and be like, I need a raise. And they'd have to do it. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing with all of the quarterback contract drama that happens year in and year out, in my opinion, is a lot of times I don't think teams have much of a choice.
They don't.
Like once you draft who you think is going to be your long-term franchise quarterback, you've kind of made your bed with that quarterback, at least for a period of time. The market is the market, and it's not going to change. So really the only decision is, are you looking at wanting to be continuing to be in bed with that quarterback for a certain number of years or not? That's the question.
That's what the Cowboys.
It's not about like, it's not about like, okay, we're going to talk about, is it 3 years or 4 years? You know, are we talking about, is it going to be $35 million or $36 million? It's just about, are you going to be our quarterback long-term? Or it should be an easy discussion.
But it's not an easy discussion. That's
not an easy discussion, but it's like a one question discussion.
That's why the Cowboys have had such a hard time with Dak, I think. And look at the Dolphins. Like, what are you going to do with Tua?
Yeah.
What do you do with Tua? You are nothing without him. But he's not. I mean, he's not that caliber quarterback. So what do you do? I mean, that's where that question gets so dang interesting. And look, it's why the Packers did whatever Aaron Rodgers wanted for a number of years, because what are they supposed to do? And that's when you get these really interesting situations. Daniel Jones, they caved, right? Dak Prescott, Cowboys caved to some degree. Now they've got this again. The Dolphins are going to have to do it with Tua.
A great example is what the Chicago Bears just did with Justin Fields. Yep. They only had Justin Fields for a couple of years. And could Justin Fields have taken them to a Super Bowl? I have no idea. No. Like, the jury's probably still, we don't know. I mean, I think the jury's probably still out. Maybe unlikely, but I can't definitively say no, he wouldn't have taken them to a Super Bowl, but they jettisoned him out of town in favor of having Caleb Williams. They had the opportunity to do so after they had tried to build an offense around Justin Fields just the year prior. And so that's the new era in the NFL. And really, like, this isn't like just a this year thing. The Cardinals did it. Yeah. They kicked Josh Rosen to the curb the very next year, wasn't it? Like, to draft Kyler
Murray.
Yeah,
that's because he's stunk, though. Like, he wasn't any good.
But they used a first-round draft pick on Josh Rosen, and then brought in Kyler Murray.
But they quickly learned he wasn't very good.
So, like, these teams are realizing, and they have for some time now, look, like, it's going to take the right draft pick. We're going to be locked into this quarterback long-term, and, you know, if it's not going to work, we got to make a decision and get out of it as quickly as possible.
It is the most fascinating position in sports for a reason, because you just almost can't win without not just a good one, but a Hall of Fame one. And so you see it like, yeah, it's where the Justin Fields things. I like Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields is going to be the, you know, eventual starter in Pittsburgh, and he'll probably win games in the NFL and be fine. Justin Fields ever going to make the Hall of Fame, win you a Super Bowl if you're the Bears? The answer to that's no. I mean, if you're making the evaluation, I'm not, you know, trying to speak definitively, but if you're making the evaluation, you would have to say, yeah, no, that's not it. So we have an opportunity to take this guy. Let's try to run it up and see if we can't do it again.
And I think what is so unique about that situation, like I just mentioned, that is a little bit different than everything else. And even going back to that Cardinals analogy, what they did with Kyler Murray a few years ago, is that they had invested quite a bit of capital in free agent acquisitions and trades and drafting to build a team around Justin Fields, just to turn around and trade away Justin Fields and then go get Caleb Williams. And so, even the thought of, hey, we're going to invest, we're really going to try to put a good quality offensive line and get him some weapons like DJ Moore and other players to go around Justin Fields. At the end of the day, they felt like they would have a better chance, even with all of those upgrades, to benefit the way that Justin Fields plays football if they had Caleb Williams at quarterback.
So what do you do if you're the Dolphins with Tua? I mean, it's not all that dissimilar from Dak. The numbers are out of this world. Tua has had more of an availability issue than Dak Prescott, certainly. But the numbers are out of this world. But you don't feel like it's going to be good enough. Tua's not going to win a Super Bowl in Miami. Dak's not going to win a Super Bowl in Dallas. Yeah. So do you just let those guys walk? I don't know what you do.
My biggest concern with Tua, you just referenced it, it always has been the injury history. I always have concerns that what he's faced, especially concussion related, is eventually, I mean, it's probably going to shorten his longevity in the NFL. I have a hard time thinking that he's going to be 40 and an NFL quarterback, you know? So to me, that makes it tougher for me to want to commit to him long-term. Everybody always says that. I've always believed the best ability is availability, you know, and there's been quite a bit of time that Tua has not been available for the Dolphins over the course of his time there.
Couldn't you say that about Joe Burrow at this point in his career too?
And
never question that with Joe Burrow. Right. And so Tua's 26.
I think it's fair to question that with Joe Burrow at this point a little bit. I mean, I think that
I even have
on this show. I've said, like, look, like everybody's ready to say the Bengals are like going to be this team that makes another run this year. I don't know. Joe Burrow spent a lot of time in his career on the shelf.
But that's what gets wild about it, too, is you try to like envision like, OK, what guys actually have a chance? And certainly Mahomes is raining on everybody's parade these days. But like if you knew the qualifier was like you're going to have to eventually probably be a Hall of Famer to be able to get it done. So then what are we doing? Like only the, you know, the Bills, the Ravens, the Bengals, we think, like, are those the only teams that are going to compete for a Super Bowl? No, it's not. That's not how you have to operate if you're a team. It just does get fascinating every time we get to the quarterback position and to see how many guys get overpaid at the position, knowing full well those guys are never going to win a Super Bowl. And this is the dynamic we live with. The Cowboys are reliving it again with Dak Prescott right now, which is wild to think about, but they are. Like, based on what we've seen and what we know in the history of the league, is Trevor Lawrence ever going to win a Super Bowl? Is Jared Goff ever going to win a Super Bowl? I'm trying to think of who's been paid recently. You know, was Kirk Cousins ever going to win a Super Bowl? I mean, how real can you be if you're an owner? Of course, you got to pay those guys, but you got to pay them knowing that it is what it is. It's a strange dynamic in this league, and we'll have to see. I think the Dolphins will get Tua paid. I think his is more about a length of time as much as anything else. If I were the Dolphins, I would say Tua. I don't know if I'd reset the market with Tua, but I would guarantee a whole bunch of his money, but do it for like 3 years, 2-3 years, and just guarantee most of it, but on a shorter deal, right? Because you got to make sure he's healthy. If you're talking about some of the other quarterbacks who are going to be in that situation, what do you do with Dak Prescott? What does Dak Prescott even want? You already got your big deal, right? You already got it. Like, what, give you, okay, yeah, we'll pay you for 1 year. Like, get out of town, Dak. I'm sick of that as a Cowboys fan. Tua has not been paid yet. Most of these guys have not been paid yet when we enter this portion of the conversation. And, you know, I don't know what the right answer is. I mean, you got to pay Tua. If you're the Dolphins, you built an entire team around him. You have to. But you have to do it knowing he's probably not going to win a Super Bowl. Don't tell the team, the locker room, the coaches that. But it's reality. The Dolphins going to win a Super Bowl? Dolphins aren't going to win a Super Bowl. So, I don't know. I guess you just do it. I guess you just do it and light your money on fire. Because he ain't winning a Super Bowl. But you got to make the call. It's fascinating. And there are these decisions happening all over the league. Again, be thankful for number 15 if you're a Chiefs fan. If you're a Bills fan, be thankful you have Josh Allen or Burrow or Lamar Jackson. That's probably the list right now of guys you're 100% confident in. We'll come back. We'll get you ready for the weekend. We'll tell you when you can catch these Royals games. It's Sports Daily on a Friday. Don't go away.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.